Bro, you gotta summon the suit.
Summon that suit. Oof.
Oh,
damn. Nope.
I'm digging the digs, bro.
I give it an 8.5 on the landing.
8.4. You're gonna like the way you look. I guarantee it. I guarantee it, Steven.
Ungrateful, Mark. Altering the terms of our agreement.
Darth Vader style.
Nothing more than a corpse.
Okay. So they're doing the thing.
Who owns his body?
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh. Got you. Oh, that's creepy.
To me.
We'll find a scare. I'm dreaming about that tonight.
Should we part, you may not like my next candidate. Near and dear as she is to you.
Why does he want Layla, I wonder? I mean, I get it. I get why anybody would want Layla. I'm just saying, what is Khonshu doing?
Interesting stuff, but really creepy stuff. I wouldn't want that man wanting my girl. I'll tell you that. He's definitely not Mr. Steal Your Girl, but in a different way, I guess. I don't know what I'm saying. Continue.
Mr. Steal Your Girl's Soul. Yeah. Welcome back to New Rock Stars. Moon Knight Episode 2 confirms what the boomers have been saying from the beginning, that the hippie Chinese-speaking vegans are going to steal your kids and kill your kids, not even give them a chance. But what exactly were the circumstances of Khonshu's initial possession of Mark Spector? And why does Khonshu want Layla next? Who did Mark kill in that backstory? God damn it! Now, yes, we pulled God Amit versus What the Fish, but God Amit won by a margin of 3 percentage points in that survey, really just 148 votes. So here's what we're going to do. We're still going to kick off every episode by screaming God Amit, and then every question that we go through each episode, we're going to lead with What the Fish? So that way we get the best of both worlds. Is it too much to ask for both? In the immortal world.
Exactly. And then we can also recycle What the Fish for Namor whenever that comes.
Exactly. Maybe sooner rather than later with that Atlantis bar we saw last episode. Who knows? This is Inside Marvel. It's New Rockstar's weekly Marvel reaction show. I'm Eric Voss. My Easter egg breakdown of episode 2 is coming later today. But right now, I am reacting to this episode and answering your biggest questions with MT. MT, thoughts on episode 2?
Dude, I'm so excited to see the Mr. Knight suit in live action. Are you kidding me? Like, I didn't think we'd get it so soon. Like, it was the perfect reveal. Like he was, like, not dressed in it in the last cut, and then it just immediately cuts to a fast transformation. And I just love that decision. It was just, like, super sudden. It's like, here it is. And I love it.
I loved how it appeared just on the landing. I'll say that, like, I do miss the personality of the Mr. Knight. Just a very competent detective, a criminologist, suave. Sherlock Holmesian figure, suave, yeah. But it seems like this show is just kind of simplifying it in a way that we have Mark and we have Steven, and each of those have their super-powered forms. One, you have the Moon Knight ceremonial warrior clothes. The other one, you have what Steven thinks would be a panic suit that he would put together last minute. And it works. I think at the end of the day, they both still have superpowers, right? He's still got a wallop on that jackal, was able to bend the fender, get a fender bender on that car. So, I mean, I loved this episode. I loved how much deeper we go into the mythology, into the philosophy of Arthur Harrow's cult. And you see these folks who are living their best lives in some kind of unobserved corner of London that we don't know about, but
watching Animal Planet, apparently. They're all really just watching Animal Planet with the boys. That's what we all do on a Friday night.
They all have their wireless headphones in. They're all synced. I mean, that's the way I want to live. Like, I assume the rent is some kind of co-op, right? You just do your shift in the garden. You get the soccer ball from off the roof, and that's your chore for the week.
They all met on Craigslist.
Yeah, maybe you kidnap someone from the other side of town pretending to be a cop and you drive them over here. That's your job. Are these people actually cops and they're using, or those fake badges? I gotta assume they're fake badges, fake identities, right?
I don't know. I think they are actually cops and, like, maybe Harrow's possessing them? I don't know.
Is the entire London police force under Harrow's control? How far does this go? All the way to the top!
All the way to the top! Even kids got tattoos! Oh my god!
You were worried about Skrulls. No, we gotta worry about these Amit worshippers who are everywhere. I mean, I heard a story recently of someone who was talking about, a minor diversion here, someone was talking about a previous relationship that they were in, and the relationship was having issues, so they went to get couples therapy, and part of the reason the relationship was going bad is the guy in the relationship was, like, getting on the girlfriend for what, it was actually his wife, for what side of the sidewalk to walk on, for, like, doing things, doing chores a very specific way. And then so as they were talking to the therapist about this, the therapist suddenly sided with the guy and said, oh, you're a follower of the way. And then the wife realized that both the therapist and her husband were part of a cult in that therapy session. And that's one of the most terrifying things, to realize that you are the one person in the room who's not part of the cult, and that everyone's speaking the same terrifying language and terminology that you're not aware of. So that's a pretty chilling prospect. I would
poop my pants.
Yeah, yeah. But that's part of the way, MT. They want you to poop your pants. It's just,
this is the way.
It's a better way to do it. You waste so much water by using a toilet. What are you, crazy?
That's what I'm saying. Pants. I just go right down the leg. I use one leg per poop. And then I just change the pants.
You get two poops a day. Are you really going to poop more than twice a day? Are you kidding me?
Maybe an emergency third, but like, only two.
Yep. Let's talk about this episode, because what a wild episode. So much happened in this episode. Yes. We finally started to get some answers. So this episode begins with Steven thinking everything that happened in that bathroom was just a dream. But as we sometimes wake up the next morning after we did some horrible things in the bathroom in the middle of the night, realize, no, it was all too real. The smell lingers. The smell.
Sometimes lingers. Just wake up in the morning, passed out from a hard night's poop, and like, oh, what happened? Oh, shoot, the bathroom's destroyed.
But we get this great moment where he goes back to the museum, talks to JB, reviews the security footage, and realizes that man versus beast battle was really man versus self. We got a nice Hound of the Baskervilles reference in there. And it's almost like Fight Club in a way, right? Like, rewatching the security footage and realize it was just you there. Pretty terrifying. So he gets fired by the most understanding HR manager ever, who gives him a pamphlet. And says,
I felt so awkward during that conversation. I was like, he's being too nice. He's going to get fired.
Well, my read of that, because, you know, I got a conspiracy brain, is I think that HR rep was part of the cult, right? Because he decides not to press charges. So why did the detective show up if no one pressed charges? I guess for a stolen item, right? But like, how was anything reported to be stolen? I think he was part of it. I think we're going to see that guy in the background tilling some tomatoes in that community garden eventually.
So something's going on. Because on the pamphlet, we see like a crescent moon on there, which is kind of weird. Oh. I'm like, why is that?
I didn't notice a crescent moon. I'll have to take
it's like a green crescent moon on that pamphlet. I'm like, why do you have a crescent moon? And what is this place? What's going on here? So that guy, I don't trust him.
I don't trust any pamphlet. Don't give me a pamphlet. Website.
I gotta
carry this around now with me. It's gonna get lost in one of my coat pockets. Ugh.
Yeah, like, it's not gonna happen. Do you have a website? Like, I don't want to carry this pamphlet.
No. I don't want to killing trees for no reason. Don't ever take anything that people hand you on the street. Just don't.
Don't do it.
Then they own your soul at that point. So he gets fired. He checks in with Crawley. I have some interesting thoughts about Crawley. I mean, I think it's interesting that he's got this long golden hair. And then I think there might be a visual connection with Khonshu having that long stringy hair that kind of strings. Is Crawley a manifestation of Khonshu? I don't know. I'm probably reaching
there,
right?
That would be so interesting.
I find it interesting there.
I think that like him talking to Crawley could be evidence of like him like being able to make conversations with himself, which is why he's talking to nobody on the phone.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That's definitely connected. This guy, all of his relationships are with people who do not talk back to him. But anyway, he tracks down Mark's storage locker, and I keep an eye out for the Easter egg breakdown for it, because there are some interesting Easter eggs in the hunt for that storage locker. But so he finds a scarab, he finds some a Chinese currency, he finds some American bills, he finds an American passport of Mark Spector. Mark lays out the truth. I'm Khonshu's avatar. We tried to dispense Khonshu's justice. We're trying to keep this scarab away from Arthur Harrow. But Steven refused to give Mark the body. And then Khonshu gives us some creepy jump scares in this hallway. Just
yes, I loved it so much. So creepy. Like, I'm the biggest, I can't do horror stuff, but like, I love when I get scared. And like, I just love when like art can make me feel something. And like, that was just very, I don't like a tall, bony being approaching me in the dark.
No.
Sorry. Call me weird.
I mean, MT's being nice about it, but I did sneak up to MT in the dark one time when I was very malnourished when we were doing Fitness Origins. And yeah, I'm a tall, bony man. And he didn't like that surprise. Don't ever hug people from behind. It's just like a form of...
And that's how we first met.
And that is how we first met. I said, guess who? And he said, I have no idea what this is.
It's caught
you. Didn't go well. I mean, the diegetic lighting of this show, just the light coming from the overhead lamps, from the moon, from the street right. lamps.
Oh,
from,
my God.
From, the light from Arthur Harrow's staff. It's just so cool what they're doing with lighting on this series. I don't think we've seen
very,
that
very cool. yet. Everything, every shot is deliberate in the show. I love it.
For sure. Steven meets his wife, soon-to-be divorced wife, Layla. Turns out they were married, and Mark had been avoiding her, not returning her calls, and Mark even wants Steven to just get away from her, not talk to her. But she realizes he has a scarab, and she reveals that it points to Amit's tomb, kind of like a compass. But then these two detectives arrive, Fitzgerald and Kennedy, right? The JFK's middle name and last name. I just thought that was a little interesting. Kind of like, are these even their real names? They're looking for a stolen object. They find Mark's passport. And really, they're just looking for a reason to arrest Steven. And then they, interestingly, pull up Mark's police record for this massacre at a dig site in Egypt. A couple dead bodies. Some more interesting Easter eggs on that screen. But I just thought this was kind of making us doubt Mark for a second. Like, this guy might not be great, or he might have been framed. We don't really know yet, and I like that we don't know yet. But of course, these cops are just members of a cult. But they're also following Harrow, in addition to other... That wasn't even funny. That wasn't funny. I butchered that. Anyway, Harrow gives Steven a tour of this delightful place to live. You gotta imagine the rent there. It's got to be worth it alone. I mean,
hey man, it's the ultimate YouTuber pad. They're just all YouTubers.
They're all influencers, right? They all got their own TikToks. They're living their best lives. And we see the garden. He fills them up on some lentil soup. They're watching their nature documentaries. But
that's all you need in life: lentil soup and nature documentaries.
Steven finally combats this bullshit Amit philosophy that I'm so glad someone on this show just finally draws the line at killing kids. I love it when people in the show just completely give the best counter argument to things. And then Harrow doesn't even have an answer to it. He goes, well, you know, sometimes you gotta amputate a child. Steven's like, a kid isn't a diseased limb. Are you crazy? I wanted to just cut to some other people in the room. Like, could one person just be like,
the whole kid's my let's talk about what he's talking about.
I was saying this from the get-go. Harrow threatens him with the staff of Amit, which is interesting. We got another little tease that, you know, Amit gave this staff to his first avatar. So this is some kind of gift that's been passed through the generations. But then Layla shows up to free Mark, holding up the scarab like a kind of conch shell. I wasn't clear why Layla showed up. Was she worried? Was she just that confident that Mark or Steven in that moment could summon the suit? Why would she need to go in the room to do that? I don't know. I didn't know what her game plan was in that moment. I'll just push someone off the scaffolding and then we'll run out.
Probably wanted to save Mark because she probably had no idea. Well, she probably had no idea what he was doing with Harrow and like was like, all right, we know that Harrow's trying to kill us. So I'm just going to save you because you seem kind of crazy.
Why would she need to bring the scarab, though? If the scarab is the one MacGuffin they're trying to keep away from all these people, couldn't she just go in that room and say, like, I have it in my hand? And then they'd all be like, what? And then she's like, ha-ha, now, Mark, summon the suit. Like, I don't know why she needs to use that to get their attention. If, like, she could just lie and say she knows where it is, you know?
True.
It was just whatever. Steven has some performance anxiety, some Hulk-flavored performance anxiety. Can't summon the suit.
Happens to the best of us.
Happens to all of us. This brings us to our sponsor. No, that comes later. So Harrow is able to summon a jackal from this purple hell realm. The jackal chases him down. Steven falls out the window, summons a suit, but it's really Psycho Colonel Sanders, the dapper Mr. Knight look from the 2014 comics. But the identity still has the super strength. And Steven manages to get a few good hits on that jackal, but still gets overwhelmed. We get a GRC Easter egg on that bus there. It's fun. But he gives a control of the body to Mark, who summons a true Moon Knight warrior ceremonial suit. It looks great. And then lures the jackal in this chase across London. This is beautifully shot with the crescent moon. And it all just leaves this jackal impaled. He's like, I got the one spire of an outdoor cathedral steeple that I will just be perfect to impale this jackal. But, you know, it's over. It's closer to the east side of London. You got to run past St. Paul's to get to it. So just follow me. Trust me. But in all of this, all these costume changes, the scarab gets loose. Harrow finds it, kills a homeless guy to get it. Mark refuses to give Steven back the body. Steven's trapped in a mirror. We learn that Mark is really in servitude for Khonshu for saving his life. And Khonshu is threatening to take Layla as his next avatar. And then we end the episode with Khonshu transporting Mark and Steven to Egypt to stop Harrow in the desert.
Oscar Isaac's back in Egypt, baby, in a Marvel movie.
And not wearing too much. Not that we're complaining. Because my man, Oscar, is the delight of all the senses. We'll just leave it there. But the question I'm having, MT, is this order of possession among Mark Spector and Arthur Harrow, who's a former avatar of Khonshu, but now an avatar of Amit. So he's doing some god swapping in the mix here. What happened there? And what's going to happen next with Layla? Like, why is she Khonshu's next target? And what was this whole dark origin story for all these characters in Egypt? That's what we're talking about in this episode. But to celebrate Moon Knight, there is a new Latest Obsession shirt. MT and I are rocking
it. It's so cool. I love this design so much. I love it.
The Tomb of the Moon God. And folks, gotta be honest with you, this is selling faster than Victor's lentil soup recipe. So you gotta move fast. Go get yours over at newrockstarsmerch.com. Folks, it's really the best way to support what we do here at New Rockstars. And when you get the shirt, you will unlock the added option, if you choose to do it, to write in a custom shout out that will appear at the bottom of these after shows. And we have some popping up here. Thank you all for buying this shirt and supporting us. Kyle says, I think Steven is a spell by Khonshu to protect Mark and himself from evil. So you mean the whole Steven identity could be a spell by Khonshu? I like your thinking, Mark. I like that a lot.
Kind of like a botch spell, because Khonshu doesn't really seem to like Steven very much these days.
And so Kyle maybe just called you Mark. I'm sorry. I mean Kyle. Kyle, I like your
thing. Oh.
Your thing. But yeah, I mean, again, that's kind of the chicken and the egg debate there, right? Was Steven there before Khonshu dropped in? My thinking is that Steven or some other identity, that Mark had some form of dissociative identity disorder before Khonshu came in, just because Khonshu said, like, you said this wouldn't be a problem. So I don't think this, if Khonshu caused it, I don't think he would hold Mark responsible for it. He'd just be like, you just have to deal with this. So I think there might have been Steven there before. But I do think what we're seeing through Steven's point of view might still be an illusion, might still be being filtered or altered in some way by this possession. Let's see, another comment here. Vinicius, that might be how you say it, says, maybe Harrow was also judged unfit by Amit, and that's why he puts glass in his shoes. Interesting. His penance.
That would be really interesting, because, like, you know, what if, like, Amit saved his life the way that Khonshu saves Mark's life in the comics, and, like, this is his way of, like, you know, showing, like repaying Amit. It's like, you know what, I deserve to be dead, so I'm just going to walk in pain. And so, like, I don't know, like, but I do like the idea that he was judged unfit. He was like, hey, you're no good. So, like, you have to walk a glass in your shoes while you serve me. It's like a really mean god.
Yeah. Or maybe he's afraid to face that judgment. And he's just he knows that he did bad stuff. So he's trying to balance those scales every day by incurring this kind of punishment. Because that is kind of this self-flagellation, like corporeal punishment on yourself is something that, like, really devout religious zealots have been known to do in the real world. And that kind of seems like what Arthur Harrow is doing with that broken glass. So he's like, I am a sinner. I am a sinner. I'm a sinner. So I'm going to punish myself so that Amit, when I face those scales, won't judge me negatively.
Oh, he doesn't have to do that. All he has to do is watch Morbius.
MT spit in the fire.
Woo! Sorry. Woo! You kind of deserve that. So
don't apologize. Anyway. MT, speak your truth. And your truth is, that movie was a tub of poop. And that's okay.
No good.
If you think that. It's also okay if you liked it. We don't judge you for liking it. It's okay.
Love yeah, like what you like. It's totally fine.
It's all right. Trevor says, do you think it's possible one or a couple personalities got dusted by the snap whilst the host remained? Trevor, man, I love your thinking. The idea that there could be other identities. Mm. We know that, obviously, Steven/Mark, the body stayed because he got that passport during the blip. He got it right. 6 months into the blip. So the body stayed, but there could be other identities in there that just got dusted and then returned now on the other side of it. And Steven could have been one of those. And that's why suddenly the DID is affecting him in the middle of this possession by Khonshu. Is Steven undusted in his head?
That would be really interesting. I think that, you know, I don't think the dusting element is going to come into the personalities in his head, but it is a really interesting theory for sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive into the theory we're talking about this episode. What was the question, MT?
So, buddy, what the fish did Mark do that led to Khonshu possessing him?
Yes. An excellent question. How did the gods come into all these people's lives to begin all this madness? Well, it's some interesting lines at the end of the episode. Mark tells Steven, when I am done, when I have repaid my debt, I swear to you, you will never see me or hear from me again. We wouldn't be alive if it weren't for Khonshu, and my servitude is the price that I pay. And then Khonshu chides Mark, saying, you were nothing more than a corpse when I found you. Earlier in the episode, when they arrest him, Fitzgerald and Kennedy bring up Mark's criminal record, and they say Mark Spector was part of a team of mercenaries that hid a dig site in Egypt. Here's what they did to the archaeologists. Zip-tied and shot in the back of the head, execution style. And the computer screen shows at least 4 corpses in the sand. By the way, the computer also lists the assigned agent as Nick Pepin, the show's production manager. And then the final number begins with 1975, which is the year Moon Knight debuted in Werewolf by Night number 32. Just lots of Easter eggs in this episode. Stay tuned.
Good eye, buddy. Breakdown. Good eye.
So this sounds a lot like Mark Spector's origin in the comics. Mark, after stints with the Marines and the CIA, he becomes a mercenary with Frenchie Duchamp, who we saw on the missed calls last episode. And they join this other mercenary named Raoul Bushman. And they're all on a raid on this archaeological site in Egypt. Bushman kills the lead archaeologist named Peter Al-Raoun to find the pharaoh's tomb. But when they kill him, they leave behind the daughter, Marlene, who later becomes Mark's love interest. Bushman also mortally wounds Mark. And Mark crawls his way to the tomb and collapses beneath the idol of Khonshu, where his spirit meets with Khonshu's spirit, and Khonshu agrees to save Mark's life in exchange for Mark's service. So if this is the backstory that they do on the show, that actually might mean Layla could be the daughter of one of those slain archaeologists. Maybe she doesn't know what Mark did or how it all went down, really, but which is kind of a messed up thing for Mark to do, to marry this woman if you were involved in her father's death.
That would be kind of crazy. I get vibes that Layla might have been involved with Mark like while he was a mercenary. Like they were just always mercenaries together. But
I think they knew. Maybe even her dad was part of this mercenary group. He had a father-daughter mercenary team. That sounds adorable, right?
That'd be fun. I want to see that prequel.
So I think the fact that they showed us Frenchie's name last episode means that we're going to see this flashback at some point. But the question is, I think, how Arthur Harrow fits in all this, because he claims to have been one of Khonshu's previous avatars. And while he can't see Khonshu, he seems to know what Khonshu is saying to Mark, as if he's heard it all before. But also, Harrow recognized Mark in episode 1 as a mercenary. There was a past between them. Yeah. So, was Harrow part of this past raid on the archaeologists back when Harrow was doing Khonshu's bidding? Maybe killing the archaeologists to keep them from unearthing Amit's tomb? That might have been Khonshu's original mission. And then Mark might have felt morally conflicted about helping Harrow gun them down. And so Harrow might have wounded Mark to keep this all a secret. But then, in a moment of weakness, Harrow could have been seduced by Amit. And then Khonshu, being forced out, needing a human avatar to fight Khonshu and Harrow's new partnership, took advantage of this dying guy, Mark Spector. So then Mark could have agreed to help Khonshu to stop Harrow and Amit as part of his penance for being part of the team that ended up killing Layla's father. That's my thinking, how this all went. At what point Harrow led this mission to trying to follow Khonshu's orders to kill these people who were just, you know, unearthing Amit's tomb.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
And then as that happened, Amit came in, made a better offer. And then Harrow took up this mission. The Scarab somehow got displaced or lost in the sands of time. And then Mark is like, well, I'm dying. I need to make a good deal. And Conchie's like, well, this is my best option. I need someone to stop these two. I've been forced out. I need to swap into a new human. I guess the question remains is, why do you think Conchie wants Layla? Is Conchie just using that as leverage to threaten Mark to keep him serving him? If you release from me, I'm gonna jump to your wife. Does he really want to do that, you think?
I think that, you know, he wants Mark particularly because Mark has a particular set of skills. Like, Mark is super good at his job. Like, he is a super good mercenary. He used to be in the army. Like, he has all of this training. So I think that his avatars are only as good as they are capable of. Well, obviously, they're also augmented with, you know, this super strength and like healing factor, apparently, as we saw in episode one. So I think that, you know, he would rather have Mark, but he could easily take Layla, because as we see in episode two, Layla's more than capable of handling her own self. So he's like, you know what, I'd rather have Mark, but at the end of the day, everyone has somebody that they love. So I can use somebody that you love to threaten you to into servitude if you are not, you know, already a loyal follower of me, because he has his own agenda. He has things that he has to do. And at the end of the day, Khonshu really doesn't care. He does care about humanity to the point of like, he wants to protect the weak and like the vulnerable at night. But at the end of the day, he doesn't really care about our lives and like our love lives and all that stuff. So I think that this is just what Khonshu does, what he's done probably throughout the centuries. He just blackmails people because he views love as weak.
Yeah, but I hear that, MT. And I think just presently, that is absolutely Khonshu's motive for threatening Mark into staying in his servitude, 100%. But I do think there may be some honesty there. There, like, Layla may be the original target, perhaps Layla's father. If they are adapting that story of Marlene's father being the archaeologist who was killed, like, what if Layla is part of the reason this archaeologist team was trying to unearth Amit's tomb is because, like, they were serving Amit in some other way. Like, Amit was reaching out to certain people, like, come find me. Maybe this scarab really belonged to her and her family throughout the centuries, and that she could be part of a lineage that was part of Amit's original avatar. And this could be like her family curse, and that she just has some kind of certain important historical ancestry that ties in with Amit and that original avatar. That, like, in addition to this scarab that points to his tomb, that maybe this staff really belongs to her family or belonged to her father, and that it got passed down through the generations. And then after the father died, Harrow claimed it. Harrow took on the mantle of being Amit's fist, of the true avatar of Amit. And that he feels that guilt for trying through Khonshu, for getting in the middle of that unearthing process. And that's why he now punches himself with glass on the feet, is he feels bad for delaying Amit's resurrection, because now he is Amit's most loyal disciple. So I think there might be something there with Layla. I think that she may be a champion, maybe a human vessel that all these gods are really warring over, that she could be the key to their future.
I could definitely see that for sure. Like, because we see from like what we can tell from like all these this new phase of Marvel, it seems like these old relics like are being passed down throughout history. Like, we have the Ten Rings when Wu had the Ten Rings. And then we have, you know, this alligator staff that apparently Hera was passed down from different avatars. We have Ms. Marvel. Like, Ms. Marvel seems to find her bangles in an attic. That seems, we don't really know the plot of Ms. Marvel, but like, it seems to be like a family heirloom. So I think that we're entering this new age, and obviously the Ebony Blade from the end of Eternals, which was passed down from Dan Whitman's family. So I think that we're going to see the history of all these weird artifacts, these magical artifacts that were probably have all their roots in Africa. Because as we learned from, I believe it was the museum scene from Black Panther, Killmonger says that Africa was the birthplace of everything. And so like, when that meteor hit Wakanda, I think that a lot of weird shit came with it. A lot of like items and like all like stuff that hit Earth. And so that spread from Africa to different parts of the world. So that's just my weird, wild theory.
I love that theory, MT. I think that's such an interesting analysis. Because, I mean, that meteor hit, what was it, like 5 million BC? That was long before the Eternals arrived to help the Sumerians, you know? So, like, that could have been the origin of Earth's... my favorite theory, or one of my favorite theories in the past year, is that, like, that meteor could have really been the celestial seed. But it ended up not being the case. But I thought that could have been cool if, like, the vibranium in that meteorite that formed Mount Bashanga could have also been the vessel for the celestial seed that implanted in the core, and that all of it could have been linked. I guess technically it's not wrong yet, but...
I honestly feel like that is what they were sort of going for, because like, I think that the vibranium was sent to fortify the celestial, or to provide it maybe nourishment, because we see that the flowers from Wakanda can grow weird, like, you know, empowering flowers from this meteorite. So like, maybe it's just nourishment for the baby. It's like, here's your prenatal vitamins. They're like, I don't know, just to make you big and strong for when you come out, so you can have a vibranium shell.
It makes you strong and growing.
Vibranium Flintstones vitamins.
All right, we got a lot more from this episode we want to talk about. But first, we want to thank some friends who helped us make this episode, starting with our friends at Noom Mood. So learning to manage daily stress and anxious thoughts is something we all want, but many of us don't know where to even begin managing those things. Well, Noom Mood is here to guide you to mental wellness and to give you the tools you need to tackle stress so that you'll feel empowered to take on whatever life throws at you. Their guided approach teaches you the power of shifting your mindset in just a few minutes a day. With the team of dedicated coaches, you'll have a support system helping you on your journey. Some staff members at New Rockstars have used Noom Mood, and they mentioned how it's helped them understand their moods and even sleep better. What they like about Noom Mood is that the lessons are based on science, and they teach you about your relationship with stress and anxiety. So equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to steer yourself to happiness. Noom has helped millions of people through their weight loss program, so you know that they can help you tackle stress too. With Noom Mood, taking care of your mental wellness is empowering. All you need is 10 minutes a day, and it's an app. So it is there for you anytime, anywhere. Worry less and feel happier. Sign up for your trial at Noom.com/Marvel. That's Noom.com/Marvel to begin your trial. And we also want to thank Upstart for sponsoring this episode. We've all been hit by an unexpected expense or a bill. In times like that, it's normal to not really know where to turn. Luckily, Upstart is here to help. Upstart-powered personal loans can help you pay down high-interest debt all online with simple and easy-to-understand payment terms. Upstart has helped over 1.8 million customers on their path to financial freedom. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high-interest debt, or funding personal expenses, Upstart can help you get one fixed monthly payment with a clear payoff date. Rather than looking at your credit score alone, Upstart's model considers other factors like your income, your employment, and other information provided in your loan application to find you a smarter rate for your loan. Check your rate in minutes for loans between $1,000 to $50,000 without impacting your credit score. You can even receive funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Don't wait and check your rate today at upstart.com/Marvel. That's upstart.com/Marvel to check out your rate today. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know that we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit income and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/Marvel. All right, MT, I have a question for you. Why the fish can only Steven see the jackals?
That is the biggest question here, because as we saw from the from the beginning of the episode, not even TV footage could pick up the jackal, and like people on the streets of London cannot see the jackal when he's literally picking people up and throwing them around. So, but I think that the reason why only Steven and Mark can only see the jackal could probably have to do, and this is just my wild theory here, but like, with Steven and Mark having chaos energy in their brains, and this dark energy capable of seeing dark beings like the Jackal, whereas people on Earth cannot see them because they don't have that chaos energy sight. And like the reason why I think this is because, mostly because of Thor 2 and Thor the Dark World. Is because
referencing Thor the Dark World.
Like, this, Thor the Dark World establishes so much. It's the first like real movie that we got in the MCU that like really dives into the cosmos. Because like right after that, we got Guardians of the Galaxy, and like that really dove into that as well. So I really do feel like that movie is really important. But anyway, Heimdall, when the Dark Elves were a factor, he couldn't see them. He can't see the Dark Elves, where they live and how they move. And I think that this is sort of having to do with Heimdall being a being of light and being in this Asgard light kingdom, whereas those dark beings of, you know, the dark elves had dark, you know, chaos, ether, darkness in them. So the reason why I think that only Mark can see them is because this being is pure darkness, and that like we can, and those or people on Earth who are beings of like with light infinity energy cannot see them because they don't have the sight. But I'm pretty sure that Wanda would be able to see that being because she has that chaos in her. Well, that's just my theory. What do you
think? That's an interesting assessment. I'm really curious, you know, there were all the other people in that cult warehouse that backed away nervously when Hera was doing the chanting to summon the Jackal. Like, can they see the Jackal? Or do they just see, like, nothing? They just feel a bunch of wind and they see an invisible force crashing through their home. Like, that's what I want to know. It seems like you're right. Only people with that kind of like possession, with that kind of more avatars of someone, whether it's Amit or Khonshu or K'thon, maybe in Wanda's case, can see these supernatural forces. I think that makes the most sense. It would just be Hera and Mark or Steven.
But I also think that maybe the people who have the tattoos can see the Jackal as well, because I think the tattoos itself could actually be tied to this chaos magic. So like if you have the tattoo, then you probably, because we see that all these people seem creepily in sync during this cafeteria sync. Like everybody seems to like be laughing at the same time, like sort of like a WandaVision-esque scenario where everybody in Westview was sort of linked up through Wanda. So I think that that's what's sort of happening with Hera, where like he's controlling everyone. Like these people are not 100% with it, but like he's just, if they have the tattoo, he's able to like control them on and off whenever they want.
Think about that, MT. My assumption is that they were all there consenting, the way, which is scarier for the cult mindset, is that you're convinced. You know, it's not like you're being, I mean, that's the nature of brainwashing, right? Is it's not necessarily a supernatural force that is like mind controlling you. It's using the art of persuasion and in preying on people's insecurities to break down the way they perceive the world and build it up in this creepy, delusional way that serves your own interests. So I think the psychological power of cult persuasion is a real fear of it. It's not that like someone puts a spell on you. But now you got me thinking, like, that ink. Is it just the ink, or is that like an enchanted Death Eater tattoo in some way, you know?
I honestly think it's linked, because you know the pages of the Darkhold, right? How it's like this weird black, like it's not ink, but like this weird black substance.
It's blood!
The same substance.
K'thon's blood!
His blood is black blood on the pages! I think it's that same substance in the tattoo that is making it able to move and like act around. Like I think it's just this weird darkness that all these people are connected to Arthur Harrow. Be the chaos Wi-Fi.
Interesting thoughts. All right, another question. How did Harrow initially come across Khonshu? If Harrow's telling the truth that he was Khonshu's former avatar, now he's Amit's avatar, we talked about that. What happened in the past, and how many other avatars has Khonshu possessed over the years?
Well, we know of two already. We know Aang, and we know Korra. We know those two avatars. Just kidding. That's a Avatar Last Airbender joke.
Get out. Yeah, MJ.
I love that show. All right. No, but that's a really good question. Because we don't really know how long Hera was for this avatar of Khonshu for, and like how they even met. But I had this feeling that you're probably on the right track here. Like, I feel like I liked your theory of, you know, maybe, like you said that like Hera and Mark were mercenaries together at one point, and then like Hera became the Khonshu's avatar and then switched to Amit, right?
That's what I That's think. What we're looking for. This week, yeah, I think that. Next week,
I honestly think that that could be the case. I love that theory where, like, they were both buddies, and then they completely forgot about each other, and they now that they're on these completely different paths serving God. So, like, I think that, yeah, it might have been a quick servitude before Mark got it, but who knows?
See, I think there might have been, when Hera was a younger guy, he might have, maybe he was like a student of one of these archaeologists on that dig. Like he was, his mentor was leading the exploration and like he kind of, you know, looked up to worship the sky, but, you know, maybe started snooping around his stuff, found this old scarab and got interested or something like that. Or maybe he had some other history with Khonshu. Maybe there was some other Khonshu related relic that he stumbled into, and you know, maybe at one point he made some mistakes in his life, and I'm talking, he would have had to have been really young. We're talking like before midnight Ethan Hawke young, like early 90s. This would have had to be a long time ago, because we're talking like there's two steps of his backstory. The more recent one, he became possessed by Ammit, and long before that he was possessed by Khonshu. So like how we're talking, there's a multiple layer bean dip to what's going on in Ethan Hawke's brain here. Unless he's lying about it, which is totally possible. Again, we're talking about unreliable narrators here. We don't know how much of this claimed backstory is going to be revealed as even valid by the end of this season. So this may all just be a waste of our time. But I think...
we're speculating, bro. It's speculation.
I think it sounds like Khonshu preys upon people who want to make a kind of deal with the devil to save their own lives. Whereas Ammit makes deals with people who want to see judgment uprooted from sinners before they can commit a crime. So ideologues versus desperate people who come begging for help. That's kind of the difference between those two gods and who they prey upon. Another question we've been talking about a bit, MT, how widespread is Harrow's cult? The HR manager at the museum, we talked about. How many members of the police force are part of the cult? We know there is an alpine village. There was a guy who left his shop wearing his apron still to help steal the scarab from Mark. So that guy was just like, what are they doing outside? Oh, I'm part of this cult. I have to go join the fray. And now we have a whole district of London. Are there chapters everywhere? Can we join where we are?
I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe let's ask like our neighbor. Be like, hey, are you part of the, you know what I'm talking about?
You got the ink. You got the ink. You got the ink.
But no, I think that this cult might just still be a new cult and has like certain amounts of influence in certain parts of the world. And I think that, you know, because of all this weird shit happening post the snap and like, you know, post Tiamat just raising from the freaking ground, all these people are going to want something to believe in and like want a more pure earth that isn't like that doesn't have evil in it, because like they're scared of all this evil happening through all these MCU movies. So I think that what might be happening is that this cult is growing and like more people are coming across Arthur Harrow, at least like out of intrigue, just like who is this guy? And then maybe through his magic or through his magic cane or however, maybe chaos energy in his body, he's just like possessing people that come to see him out of curiosity. And I don't know. That's just my weird theory. What do you think?
I think the I totally get why this extremist view of wanting to stop sinners in their tracks before they do the sin makes sense in this post-Thanos world and post-Tiamat world. But you can't forget there's a big dead celestial made of marble in the Indian Ocean in this world, and no one is talking about it. Anyway. Yeah, I think people would be freaked out. It might be like, can we do something about this shit? Like,
right.
I guess my question is, like, it's pretty uncommon for a cult to gain that much steam without someone becoming aware of its existence. Like, you know, the Rajneeshi up in Oregon got pretty far. But then the local townies are like, who are these people who I hear firing guns on the other side of the hill? This Church of Scientology. It was started as like a kind of a quiet little movement starting in Clearwater, Florida and Hollywood, California. And then now some celebrities get on board with it. And then everyone is making fun of them. Like, is this cult a secret? I'm curious to know if Ethan Hawke's going on TV And right now he just kind of seems like a, you know, an Elon Musk figure that some people are on board with, and other people are like, dude, that guy's a cult leader. Don't listen to what he's got. That guy owns Twitter now. He owns it all.
I really hate that Elon Musk owns Twitter. It's really, I hate that shit.
We're 10%, anyway. 10%. He owns more of Twitter than any other one human being owns Twitter. So interesting world we're now living in. I just kind of want to know, who else? I would love to see if, like, someone we know, someone from the Avengers, if Happy Hogan is like, hey, look, I got this new tattoo.
I lost my girlfriend. I turned to religion. Check this out.
Peter's like, she wasn't your girlfriend when she died. And he's like, no, technically we were still. Yeah.
You guys were living with me. Have you watched the IT Crowd?
Yes.
Like, remember that episode where the guy's just like claiming that he slept with Jen, which after she died, he's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, we were totally boning and she wanted to love me forever, but she died. She said she proposed to me. It's so weird.
All right. One final question. I got to ask you this, MT, because I know you're going to have a hell of an answer. From where was Hero summoning the Jackal? A purple glowing realm. Yeah. Florida doesn't see those shades of purple. Not until storm clouds are coming in.
No, that is a good question. Where was he summoning the Jackal? I have this weird feeling that, you know, the Jackal was probably being summoned from a much farther region, darker region of the universe where the Celestials haven't even touched yet. Like, there's no stars, just darkness. And so, because, like, I just the way that the ground melts, it reminds me of the Tesseract scene from the Avengers when Loki first arrives. And if you just look at, like, I don't know, the ceiling when Loki first arrives, like, it just looks really melted and weird. I just feel like this is a weird teleportation wormhole situation that's going on it's like a mini wormhole where the Jackal's like, all right, I'm here now. Time to go feast on some Moon Knight. So I think that's like a portal situation, but because he only has a little bit of Amit's power and that he can't fully bring more beings like the Jackal and maybe Amit to Earth. So I think that, you know, he has a little portal staff there. What do you think?
I like that the Hellmouth opened just in that square tile. And like, whatever the grout was that surrounded that tile is like, portal, you're not getting past me. It's just going to be the foot and a half by foot and a half square tile. And you better hope that Jackal ain't bigger than that, because that's all you're getting. Just a fraction? Just a fraction of her power? You're just getting one tile, Hero! One tile! But, no, I think you're right, MT. This is some other realm. I mean, I see the glowing color purple. I immediately think Spider-Man No Way Home and Morbius! The cracks spell that traverses the borders between known and unknown realities. I think whatever this... I don't think it's another dimension. I think it's a realm between dimensions. Where all these gooey, gross monsters float around, bumping into each other. I think that's where it's from. All these supernatural creatures that they kind of exist in an upside down space that do not adhere to a specific alternate reality. But when those realities start bumping into each other and incursions, those incursions open up the grout between the realities. And they live in the grout. The grout is the purple glow. Purple glow equals grout. If you take anything away from this episode, write that down, kids.
Purple glow grout confirmed.
That's right. Whoever the masons who build this universe, the builders, perhaps, designed
the builders
all
are
the sticky
MCU?
Grout that sticks the universe together is to be glowing and purple and filled with jackals. But also all those weird things that Strange just sucked in his body in episode 4 of What If. I think those all come from the same place. We went to some interesting places in this episode of Inside Marvel, as this episode of Moon Knight went to some interesting places, and it's only going to get crazier from here, folks. So again, the breakdown of this episode, the Easter egg breakdown, coming out later today. It's got some doozies in it.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Don't forget to check out all of our great merch options. Again, Tomb of the Moon God.
Check out the shirt, guys. Oh my God, this shirt is amazing. I think this is probably my favorite shirt that we have so far. I love the design.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. You got nine little, the Ennead kind of hands there coming out. It's filled with Easter eggs. I'm sure these things translate into something. It's probably like, Eric is a freaking idiot. Eric is overrated. Eric's always going through bullshit theories. Don't listen. This idiot still thinks Mephisto was in WandaVision. Yeah. It's all just hate. I guarantee it. I don't have time to translate it. Well, be sure to follow MT at Mastertainment. Follow me at EA Voss. Subscribe to Inside Marvel wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you all so much for watching. Be sure to subscribe to New Rockstars. And
love you guys.
We'll see you next week. Later, gators.
Later, gators.